Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I'm going to belay the preliminaries that we normally have at the front end of this program to bring our guest right to the forefront, because it's not a subject that I usually cover on this program, although we sort of allude to it in other programs as well. I guess I can say that the program is here, Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. As I've said before, we're looking for those new ways of living. The old ways don't work. How do I know? Look around. Open your eyes. They aren't working. And so we need to find those new ways of living. And I honestly do believe that the insights of our guest and the collaborators of this new compendium, it is actually 45 years, so to speak, in the making. It's an anniversary edition, UFO, Contact from the Pleiades. And together for the first time, the photojournalist, the photojournals, UFO, Contact from the Pleiades, volumes 1 and 2. They're combined in a special 10 by 10 inch, 200 page, hardbound 45th anniversary edition. That's a mouthful. Our special guest here on the program is certainly one of the, I guess you'd say she's a, sort of a the co-author or compiler or what have you. We'll talk to her about her exact title. And we're talking today with Britt Elders. She has been involved in this research, well, we'll find, at least for 45 years, obviously before that, because these volumes came out 45 years ago when I first got into this business, believe it or not, in 79. Britt, thank you so much for joining us here on the program, all the way from, well, I was going to say the Pleiades, you're not quite that far out. As I said at the front end of our conversation before we got started, if the mothership comes, I'm going. Okay, I have had it up to, you know, that's why my father is not here anymore. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Richard. I'm looking forward to this.
You know, there is an element here where you've got to have a sense of humor. You absolutely do when you talk about this conversation with extraterrestrials, life elsewhere. My summary of it all is, it is the height of human arrogance to think that we are the only beings, creation in the universe. You want to believe in what the Bible says or some other ancient wisdom teaching? Go right ahead. But I find it's hard for me to believe with what the Hubble telescope has shown us and how they've done mathematical equations to tell us that there are, I don't know if it's in the trillions, but I wouldn't be surprised, of galaxies in our universe, which means there are, I don't know, gugillion planets, and certainly more than 8 billion class M planets. And if the good Lord had intended for each one of us to have a solitary life, we would be individually on those. But that ain't the case. We're all here, which means we're all supposed to kind of work together, play together, grow together, share, and somehow, I don't know, I just, you know, be kind in that respect. It's not a solo endeavor. And so we want to talk a little bit about this in terms of this whole issue of this contact from the Pleiades. Now, first of all, you have a foreword in here by, I'm going to call her a young woman. I know she's not, but I like to refer to her in that respect. And now, where? McLean, Shirley McLean. Thank you. That was the universe just happened in there. They asked the questions. I'm just along for the ride. But Shirley has contributed, and she's obviously said some things about this, and she's obviously been very outspoken for the majority of her life about, you know, psychic and paranormal and other things, as well as other beings in the universe.
Yes.
I'm curious as to how you were able to secure her in regards to helping to kick off this 45th anniversary edition.
Shirley is one of my dearest friends. I've known her since 1980. She had called and she was writing the book Out on a Limb and wanted us to take her to Switzerland to meet Meyer, the contactee that we're going to talk about. So we eventually agreed. We took her to Switzerland. She's an absolute question machine. I have never met anyone that is so curious about everything. And she had a wonderful time with Meyer for several days, morning till night. She had her tape recorder going and they were having wonderful conversations, she asking questions, him answering. So Shirley kind of became very aware, firsthand, personal experience of what was going on in Switzerland with this contact case in Edward Meyer by being there. She actually got up and went, spent the time, then she came back and wrote Out on a Limb, which has a character in there that is a compilation of three different individuals that were contactees.
Well, this is something that I have been following, not so much your your book and the Pleiadians, but in general, this whole aspect of otherworldly beings. And there's this group, which I'm sure you're probably familiar with, that is talking about the five phases of contact. And obviously, with the movie that came out, I guess it was in the 70s, with I believe I thought it was Richard Dreyfuss.
It is Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Close
Yes.
Encounters, right? And they're talking about contact, first contact, second contact, third contact, in this case, the movie Third Contact, fourth and fifth. And I'm sitting here going, as I'm watching these documentaries on this particular group of people and these contacts, I would love to have fifth contact or contact of the fifth kind, if you will, in that I'd like to have a better understanding, which I would hope they would give, of what in the world we're doing here. Why are we, my wife actually surmised this, and I thought this was highly profound from her, from coming from her. And that's not slighting her by any means. She's a very intelligent woman. But she said she knows we, you and I, human beings, are not indigenous to this big blue marble. And if you take a look at all of the other species on this planet, with only one exception, I would say the octopus, and I'll explain later, every other species is where they are supposed to be, as far as the climate and conditions. Man is spread all over the place, has to build structures to withstand the various weather conditions, for whatever reason, deems it necessary to wear clothing of various types to protect oneself. And obviously, there are ancient wisdom teachings that tell us that, well, we violated a rule and now we're ashamed of our bodies, all that kind of stuff. And we're the only ones who cannot sustain life, let's just say, for the sake of argument, at the North or South Pole, or say at the top of Mount Everest, out in the middle of, say, the Sahara or Death Valley. I don't know of anybody that lives in Death Valley, maybe near it, but not in it, and so on and so forth. So it's like, okay, if we were indigenous, why would we not be equipped with?
Yeah, it's true. Most of the contactees actually talk about that. That their forefathers were our forefathers. And that's true of this case as well. When Billy was talking to the Pleiadians, they said, our forefathers are your forefathers, and they look at us as their little brothers. But many civilizations have visited Earth. And in that, we have been populated by other places from outer space.
Greg Brayton has been on this program a number of times. I'm trying to get him back on here in the 2020s. Been interviewing him since the middle, maybe late 90s. And he shared in one program about a stretch, and I think it was either India or Pakistan. It was a remote area where this stretch, a huge area, was like a sheet of glass. And originally it was sand. And he said that the questions, obviously, that came were, well, wait a minute, what caused the sand to turn to glass? And then, of course, you go to the next level. Well, what causes glass to melt? What temperatures? And you'd go, okay, so what would cause that level of a temperature in this specific area that would cause the sand, the silica, to turn to glass. And of course, the conclusion that most people come to is it had to have been a nuclear blast.
Yes,
by the
the
way,
same is true
go ahead,
in South
please.
America.
Yeah.
There are several places in South America where that type of glass has been found as well. In Ecuador, I know of, I've seen it. And there's no explanation for it other than a nuclear blast.
So what that implies, and maybe it's more than an implication, that there have been civilizations, and we're talking going back more than 6,000 years,
yes,
who have been here, and it has been said that we are going through what is considered the fifth cycle. And if we don't get our, I'm not going to bleep this, crap together,
right,
we're going to do it again for the fifth time.
That's very true. The Lakota have their cycles. They follow the white buffalo woman. In Mexico, they call what's going on now the sixth sun. That began with the eclipse in 91. It's about us. We have to be responsible for ourselves, change the way we look at each other, change the way we look at the world, and work to make ourselves better people. It's kind of scary to think that in the space we're in right now, we would go into outer space and expect everyone else out there to view us with the same arrogance we view ourselves.
Yeah. And I take it, based upon not only your experiences, but obviously the people that you've interviewed over the years, that isn't the case out there. I don't want to just say they, but I guess we'll stay focused on the Pleiadians. They don't have that level of arrogance. They actually have an understanding of who they are and what processes they are going. They have a self-awareness to the extent that they know they have to sort of keep not reinventing themselves, but sort of rediscovering themselves so they don't make the same mistakes twice, so that they actually do learn from their own history.
Absolutely. The Pleiadians actually did not originate in the star system of the Pleiades. They originated in the system of Lyra, which is the ring nebula of Lyra. They had factions on their planet, much as we have on ours, where they did not get along. They created a nuclear type war, destroyed the planet, had to flee and find a planet they could engineer to live with the same type of atmospheres and things like that. They had to create that basically from scratch, according to the conversations Billy had with Semyasa. So this is something that we need to think about here and now with everybody's finger on the nuclear trigger. This is not an arena we want to go into. We don't have the capabilities of engineering anything new.
Yeah. Now, bear in mind, I'm going to say this extremely facetiously. I have a solution to all of humanity's problems, and it will take care of it in an instant. Just set off all the nuclear bombs, kill all of the people, and guess what? No more problems.
There's a problem with that.
That
we
is correct.
Then create a problem throughout the cosmos,
yep,
because what we do here affects everything else out there. It's that butterfly effect. It's true.
We're all connected.
Absolutely. And we have to understand that at some point. We've got to get to the point of understanding our connection is much more than a sit-down conversation between two or three people. It is a heart connection, a spirit connection. And we need to really improve that ability to communicate with each other and develop that connection.
I want to dive into some of the book as well, and of course the history and your involvement, your curiosity, and so forth. But I'm curious as to your observations, your perspective on the recent congressional hearings. Now, there was a gentleman who wrote a book that I didn't get a chance to interview him, but I wanted to. It was called AD, After Disclosure. And I was prepared to interview him, and the very first question out of my mouth would have been, what makes you think that the American people, specifically the American people, would believe the government is telling us the truth after they've been lying to us for 60 years?
Right.
Now, that would have been the first question. But they hold these hearings, And these people are now saying, oh, yeah, they're out there. We're not alone. On and on and on and on. And so forth. What was your observation? Do you think that that was a valuable use of time and so forth and media? Or was it a waste of time and energy? We just, you know, it's like we might believe the individuals who are the witnesses who are testifying.
Right.
But the government doesn't care. They're doing this. This is just a show for the public to placate people.
I happen to agree with you very wholeheartedly. And I think what happened was that the witnesses were great because at least it let people have firsthand experiences that they got to hear.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. Congress and the military now doing their thing with, oh, look, we're going to set up something that you can call and report a UFO sighting. And then they follow it up with, these are only things we can explain. They never go into detail. They've not released all of the information yet, even though they said they would. So I do think it is more of a show, a presentation, to get people to slow down, stop thinking about it, go on about life. That's not going to happen. Right now, this topic is hot all over mm-hmm. the world.
Yeah.
And our government is slow in reacting to it. Other places, Brazil, China, England, France, Italy, they've come out with statements about these things. They've released files. We're not doing that. And that's unfortunate because the population needs to know in order to make decisions.
There was a conclusion that I came to based upon a lot of the evidence, if you will, the pictures, the testimonies, and so on and so forth. We are not alone.
Mm-hmm.
If these are intergalactic travelers, we'll call them, and they can travel light years in maybe an instant, they're going through wormholes or what have you.
Right.
And they wanted to take over the planet, subjugate us, turn us into slaves, or even wipe us out. My theory is you and I wouldn't need to be having this conversation because it had already have been done. And
exactly.
Yet, even after the, and actually this has been before these congressional hearings last year, the government, as it begins to acquiesce, instead of just saying, yeah, we're not alone, they turn it into a national security issue. These other beings are dangerous. They're malevolent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then again, I go back to my point. If they were malevolent, we would be done. It would
exactly.
be over already.
Yes, that's very, very true. And people don't go that far quite often. They hear the fear stories.
Yeah.
They hear the promotion of fear. They react to that. And they don't go to the place of thinking, well, if they can do this, if they have these capabilities, why haven't they done it?
Right.
And it's the ability to think and to reason and to move forward in thought rather than being stuck with what one person says as valid.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to go beyond that. You have to do your own searching.
You know, I would love to do 2 hours with you. Obviously, we're not going to be able to do that, but we're not done yet. Don't get me wrong. I'm not stopping here. I'm just saying that there's so much that we can talk about in this regard. I want to let you folks know that this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Britt Elders. She is an investigative and documentary filmmaker. She travels the world exploring exploring the topics, including the mysterious world of UFOs. She's participated in several in-depth investigations, including we're going to talk about Billy. Is it Mayer?
Meyer.
Billy Meyer case and waves of UFO sightings in Mexico, which began in 1991 and continue today. And she's also the CEO of ShirleyMcLean.com. Britt is actually also does her own writing and research, and I find this fascinating, quite honestly, that this conversation that we're having, it's not something that I normally have gone into. I've been doing this program for over 15 years, interviewing for over 40, probably close to 44, Anyway, and I've not really chosen to go down this road simply because of, maybe it was because of the stigma, but I've let that go. And I'm saying, you know, there, I mean, I deal with more of the spiritual and metaphysical aspects. That's pretty woo-woo in and of itself. So what am I afraid of, you know? And I can't prove any of this. I might believe some of this, and I can share my beliefs and my theories and so forth, but I don't know. For example, when we talk about death and dying, I don't know that there's anything else after this. And even if there isn't, we won't know it anyway, because there isn't, you know, it's over, it's dark, right, it's done. But it doesn't make any sense. It's illogical that we would be created to live these lives, to have these experiences, these conversations, these insights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then it's lights out. That makes no sense to me. So, plus the fact we have people like Shirley MacLaine, regardless of what your perspective is on her, folks, who has associated with, I think, the paranormal, the spiritual, the other side, if you will, and so on and so forth. So that's why we're talking about this today. Let's go ahead and dive into the conversation that this particular book that we're talking about, the volumes 1 and 2, and again, the title of the book is UFO, Contact from the Pleiades. This is the 45th anniversary edition. It's volumes 1 and 2, and I take it that when it was first released, it was actually two separate books.
Yes.
And here we are in the 21st century, and whammo, we've got it in one volume. A wonderful, if you still have a coffee table, a coffee table book. But first of all, who is a Billy Meier?
Billy Meier is he's a human, just like you and I. He has one arm. He lost one arm in a bus accident. He's wise, but worldly, not educated the traditional way. He only has a fifth grade education, but he has traveled throughout the Middle East and through Europe. So he's very knowledgeable. The great thing about Billy is he's a very normal person. And when this case began back in 1975, you have to remember, we didn't have phones, cell phones. We had telephones, but not cell phones. Mm-hmm. We didn't have personal computers. We didn't have Photoshop. And Industrial Light and Magic was just getting started. So there were none of the technical abilities available to this farmer that there are today. Mm-hmm. He was taking photographs, movie footage, supplying audio recordings of the craft, and had metal samples of the skin of the craft. Where does a man that is a farmer with a limited education get all of that material that then we took as the investigators and had analyzed at labs all around the world? These laboratories may not have believed that Billy was having contact, but they could not duplicate what he had. We're talking JPL, IBM, Scripps mm-hmm. Institute, these different places where that's what they do. They knew how to analyze this material. They couldn't duplicate it. They didn't know what it was. And they just frankly said, your guess is as good as mine, but I know it has not been faked. So what do we do with that? As investigators, we decided that the books and documentary film, which is coming out soon, should be put together so people can make their own decisions.
Well, there's a shocker. Let people make their own decisions.
Well, you got to trust people at some point. They can think.
Yeah. It bothers me that our government specifically seems that they have the attitude, quoting a line from the movie with Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise, they seem to think that we can't handle the truth.
True.
And yeah, it's like, who do you think you are? You know, it's we the people. If you're talking mm-hmm. about America, the United States, it's we the people who are in control, not you. But I think that
people have to remember that we're in control.
Exactly right.
We have to put ourselves in a position so we voice and express ourselves. And mm-hmm. we don't do that anymore.
Why did you even get involved in this? What was it about this subject? And I say it in the general sense, in a generic sense, that clicked in you saying, I got to check this out.
Well, personally, I have been interested in the subject for a long time. My dad was literally a rocket engineer. He worked with von Braun on the early missile programs.
Oh, wow.
And so he told us a lot about things that they saw and they experienced. And that always stayed in the back of my mind. And then when this was brought to us, this specific case was brought to us by Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens. And he asked us to put our investigative company, Electronic Countermeasure Company, into the investigation so we could do a thorough and professional investigation of the evidence. We agreed. We had a client in Europe, and so we went from London into Switzerland, met with Meyer, and he turned over everything. Inner negatives, 8mm movie footage, metal samples, audio recordings, and we interviewed hundreds of witnesses. So that's how we got started in it.
Yeah.
But I always had a curiosity about it because of what my dad had told me.
We have heard, and I have, I've been working with a gentleman. His name is Steve Cates. He goes by the moniker Dr. Sky. And I helped to produce a series of interviews where he focuses on astronomy, space, aviation, and weather. And he has had a number of astronauts going back to the Apollo series.
Yes.
And many of them, before their passing, have talked about their experiences, or at least their awareness that we're not alone when they were out there, out in the cosmos, we'll call it, because even when you leave the atmosphere, you're in the cosmos, traveling to and from the moon.
Right.
I think, I'm not sure, but I think even shuttle astronauts have also had similar experiences where either they saw and or heard, or they just, by slipping the surly bonds of Earth via these vehicles, their awareness was sort of, I guess, opened up.
Yes.
You know, it's like the atmosphere was kind of, it was like a dome over their awareness. And as soon as they got outside the dome, bingo.
Yeah, we had the opportunity to meet with Gordon Cooper years ago, and he told us about what he felt and what he experienced out there. And then Edgar Mitchell was a good friend and a wonderful man. And his experience literally changed his life because he realized it was more of a spiritual connection to the entire cosmos. You're not just one lone island there.
Yeah.
It's everything that is connected, interconnected to you.
One of the things that has come up in those programs that I've helped to produce and actually co-host, we talk about dark matter occasionally, which I always make fun of it because I go, but you can't see it. It's only available if you do the math, which I'm not about to do. I'm sorry, I don't understand that kind of math. I barely made it out of geometry class in high school. I never took trig or calculus or any of these other things. But it's like there are things that we as human beings choose to believe in.
Yeah.
And there's a large segment of the population that says yes. And they claim that it's true. And then they try to gather evidence to support it. I find it fascinating, for example, and I was born and raised a Catholic. I worked for a Christian radio station for 15 years in the early days of my career. And I was asking, I call them the heretical questions. Stamp a big old H on my forehead. I'll wear it proudly because the answers that I was given made no sense. And even in the Bible, as well as I'm sure other ancient wisdom teachings, there is reference being made, although it's somewhat veiled in some of the language that's used, that even the Israelites the people in the Old Testament, as well as the New, were experiencing contact with other beings from other worlds. But it has been said that if that were acknowledged, it would undermine. Matter of fact, that was one of the other things with the author of AC, After Contact, that if all of this came out and it was proven to be true, it would literally change everything. It would change the religion. It would even change our economy. It would change mm-hmm. our education. I mean, the list goes on and on. Is that a fair observation on the part of some?
It really is, because any civilization, ancient civilization you look at, has either in legend form and myth or via petroglyphs or cave paintings, records of extraterrestrial visitations. Mm-hmm. So this goes back through history all around the planet. It doesn't just happen in one place. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And if you really get in and dig and find out all of these historical connections, long before we had the written word, it's amazing. It's mind-boggling that this was going on.
I am curious about, I'm going to bring up a subject that is going to throw up a bunch of red flags for a lot of people. I'm sorry for what is the phrase they talk about for triggering you? What is the conversation surrounding the issue of gender? Now, human beings from my early days in biology class, when the sperm and the egg are joined together, they come together and they start to divide and divide and divide. It has been shown that every single human being starts out as a female.
Mm-hmm.
And then the DNA information says, okay, add a Y chromosome over here. No, right. Keep two X's over here. Y over here. Has there been any conversation regarding gender, especially in regards to, and I don't want to say the confusion,
right?
Because if you start taking a look, for example, at cosmetic surgery, I used to poo-poo that thing. Oh, come on, you know, go get some therapy. And what, you know, and then I got to thinking more and more deeply about that. And, you know, if a person feels that they need to make an alteration in their physical body that helps them and their psyche, their emotional, mental state to be more at peace, uh-huh. Do it. Go for it.
Right.
And I feel this whole issue regarding gender selection by an individual is, I think it's the same thing. Has this ever been a conversation that you're aware of over the years?
It is a conversation, not necessarily with Billy, but with other contactees and people that have had experiences with extraterrestrials. They say that there are two genders on Earth, but there are multitudes of sexual choices and identifications.
Mm-hmm.
But the genders go back to the Y and the XX chromosomes. That's how they look at it. There are civilizations, though, out there in the cosmos mm-hmm. that are androgynous, that have never made that division between male and female, and deal as one total human being. There are many thoughts also that what we're looking for here on this planet is the other side of ourself, because when you have that XX or that XY chromosome issue happening, you're missing half of yourself. So in that search for identity, you're trying to attract yourself to mm-hmm. yourself. So there's a lot of conversation that isn't too detailed and specific, but those are the generalities that we hear from contactees.
I'm curious, too, about this aspect of the depictions of some of these things that we're talking about in mm-hmm. our modern day science fiction television programs, as well as movies. A real good friend of mine who I've actually had on this program, he and I worked together at the Christian station back in Phoenix, especially mm-hmm. in the 80s and early 90s. And he said something to me that changed my view of this particular TV show. And he said, Star Trek, The Next Generation is our modern day mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if some of the stories, because they've dealt with these subjects, they actually have dealt with the whole androgyny, as well as one episode that dealt with the evolution of a particular species from a physical humanoid body into what looked like golden light. And then it just went right through the ship and out into space. And that the powers that be on his planet, he being the character, they were trying to shun him. They were trying to imprison him, but he was evolving. That's all he was doing, but they didn't like it because it didn't conform with the social norms and so on and so forth, which is part of what I see happening today in our culture when we talk about this whole issue of gender and the conversation surrounding that.
Interesting point. Yeah, that's I have to say, there are contactees that claim that the beings they meet with, not only can they be physically very different from us, but also they can be energy. Nothing that we recognize in a physical form, but like that being that went out through the ship and out into the cosmos in an energy form, that's what these people are communicating with and seeing. So it's we can't limit ourselves to the physics we understand on this third dimensional thump on it planet. We have to be in a position to be more receptive and accepting to other things. We do know the human body gives off energy. That's a scientific fact. So if we're giving off energy, why couldn't that energy not require a human form? Why couldn't it just be energy? And maybe that's the realm that they're dealing on. I do think it is something that we have to look at from the standpoint of what is out there, but also what's going on within ourselves right now at this moment. Because each of us are experiencing something that is unsettling. What does that energy do to us? How does it make us react? Where do we find our center and our balance? It's really a big deal. And we're missing the boat in so many cases.
Have you had contact yourself?
I have not had contact. I have had many sightings.
Sightings.
Many sightings, yes. I am not aware of having contact. I do have a period of missing time.
What about, and it was primarily in the 70s, 80s, maybe into the 90s, about a lot of the reports by abductees of these examinations, and obviously they joke about this, the probing, that kind of thing. Was that, because I heard from someone in the 90s as I was having a similar conversation about this whole subject, that they, being the non-humanoid beings that have been doing this, they were told to stop it. And supposedly it was, in other words, it's not happening anymore. And I don't know if that's true.
I don't hear about it anymore.
So maybe they did.
That's very, very possible. I haven't looked too deeply into abduction cases. I'm more interested in cases that have physical documentation that can be thoroughly analyzed. And so that's why I went into the plating case and the Mexico events. Those are phenomenal. Anything that's providing evidence is worth a second look. I know a lot of abductees. I have interviewed them. What they feel is real. But many times I found also through Dr. Mack, Johnny Mack, and others that are really involved in this situation of abductions, they find that the people labeled it an abduction because of the fear. And it was the fear of the unknown, the fear of a being that looked different than they did. And that was something that just resonated. So they couldn't call it a contact. They called it a fear, an abduction. And then the probing, they agreed to. So many times we found that it was something that they had agreed to on a conscious or unconscious level. when they were going through hypnosis to review all of the circumstances. That came out often.
Yeah. And I'm just curious to finish this up here on this issue of the abductees. What about evidence of things being implanted?
Yes, there is a lot of evidence of that. There was a doctor in California, he's recently passed, and he had volumes of x-rays where people had things implanted in their sinuses, behind their ears, little tiny things that you could barely perceive on the x-ray. And then quite often he would go in and do surgeries to remove it. It was things that he couldn't understand or explain, had no business being anywhere near a person's brain or head or sinuses. Yeah.
Britt Elder's my guest. I'm Richard Dugan, and you're listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm curious on another level. When we get together with many of our guests, we talk about raising our consciousness, getting in touch with the divine. What can you tell us about your interviews with people who have had contact and conversations, for that matter, in regards to the spiritual world? Is there that same connection amongst these folks, these beings that are out there? Do they have a spiritual life? Are they worshiping? And I hate to put it this way, are they worshiping the same God as we are?
Well, let's talk about the Pleiadians specifically, because
okay.
they do believe in a creation force.
Mm-hmm.
They say, you call it God, call it many other names, but it's a creational force. It exists in everything. It's the thing that ties us all together.
Mm-hmm.
So our interaction with whatever you want to call it, God, divine, creation, is about recognizing a piece of ourselves in that creational force, as well as everyone around us. They also say that we won't really grow until we develop as a spiritual being. And that is leaving the anger, the monetary greed, the things like that behind, to move forward where it's not where it's like a communistic society where everything is supposed to be equal,
right,
but where people really can do the things that their natural gifts propel them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a writer, you instinctively write. If you're an explorer of the cosmos, you instinctively explore. The Inca tried to do that in their cultures. And this is something that the Pleiadians say we need to do as well. But we have to become aware of the creational existence that's within each of us and everything here.
Is there validity in the philosophy that, and I'll use the term you've used, that the creative force,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was it Stephen Hawking who said, no, I think it was Carl Sagan who said that it's actually a friendly universe, that the creative force is not only friendly, but that the creative force actually does, if we will allow it, it will take care of us, similar to the way Jesus spoke to his disciples who were moaning and groaning and complaining about, oh my God, what are we going to eat? And where am I going to sleep? And what am I going to wear? And he points to the birds. He points to nature, basically, and say, look at nature. It's doing its thing and it's taken care of. And you were created as a higher being than those things. Doesn't make you superior, mind you. And how much more will you be taken care of? Is that creative force? I don't know if there's been that much in-depth aspects to.
There has been.
Oh,
there
wonderful.
Has been. But it's important because you have to take care of yourself first. So you have to recognize that spiritual connection to creation, to each other first.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you start moving in that arena, and I hate to use the word love because it is so overused mm-hmm. and applied to everything you can think of.
Yeah.
But if you begin to love, that heartfelt connection between everything that exists, you develop as a spiritual person. So you become a more spiritual being. You look at your enemies with that same heartfelt love that you do your best friend. And then you raise yourself up. And by raising yourself up, the Pleiadians say that when you hit that point, then the world opens up to you. Then the cosmos opens up to you. Then you can successfully join and take your place in the cosmos, in the universe, because you've done the work. Yes.
You know, I came across this in an interview just recently. We were talking about the golden rule, as it's said. And I mean, Jesus made the comment, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Right.
Now let's bring it full circle, so to speak, as far as the whole interconnectedness of all of us in the universe. Do unto others because you are the others.
Exactly. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're talking with Britt Elders. We're talking about, of course, this latest release. This is one heck of a, I was going to say a really big book. It's 10 by 10 inches. UFO Contact from the Pleiades. It's volumes 1 and 2. I would show it here, but unfortunately, my camera tends to dissipate anything I put in front of me. So it actually is, for those watching the video, I have it placed between you and I in the frame so that people can see the book, as well as your website, which is brittelders.com. And we encourage folks to go to your website. As a matter of fact, let's see here. I want to just scroll back up here so that I can actually quote it. And it is BritElders.com. We hope that you will go there. She's on Facebook as well as LinkedIn. And I am so fascinated by the more ethereal, esoteric, if you will, aspects in regards to the other beings that that exist out there, and we can stay focused on the Pleiadians. We humans have done a bang up job of anthropomorphizing the creative force.
Yes.
And I have this, and I'm curious about this aspect too, because you've sort of alluded to this, and I'll give you the quick analogy. There's an individual walking around in this beautiful meadow, has his or her hands cupped out in front of them. And if one could extract their personal will and put it in their hands, this is what this person's doing, and walking, I just want to do God's will. I just want to do God's will. I just want to do God's will. The creative force, if you will, the anthropomorphized force, is looking down and tears are streaming down its face, moved that one of its creation wants to do the creative force's will. And the individual walking in the meadow tosses it up into the air. And the creative force catches it in its hands and begins to compress it down to the size of a baseball. And then rears back and throws a 90-mile-an-hour Nolan Ryan fastball and hits the individual squarely in the head with these words. Then do something with the life you have been given. You are not a puppet on a string being manipulated by forces you do not understand. Is that kind of the message that we're getting? And I'll stay focused on the Pleiadians. From the Pleiades philosophy, if you will.
Yeah, that is. But like I said, it starts with self.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
have to do that in the beginning, and you've got to do the inner work, and you've not got to let fear come in and let it dictate and manipulate you. And that's what so many people do. But if you do that, if you hit that, live your life, the best life you possibly can, by understanding you are connected to everything, everything, everyone, then you move forward, but not until then.
Yeah. I've been through since the early 80s personal growth program, started with Life Spring, which was an outgrowth of EST. Then in Phoenix, there was a program created by a gentleman by the name of George Adair. No, not the famous philosopher. He was a printer. Mm-hmm. In Phoenix, and it was called Delta Vector and Omega Vector. And my first wife and I went through those.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating because he would take the teachings of, for example, Zero Point and Chardin and Descartes and so forth. and others, and he would be teaching that very philosophy of personal responsibility, of interconnectedness, interdependentness, if you will, through various different exercises and games and so forth. And I found it so fascinating that shortly before the end of my first marriage, I was asked, and I acquiesced, to go to therapy. And it just so happens it was a female therapist. And she accused me of having character flaws somewhere along the way. And I'm thinking, well, this doesn't seem real positive kind of conversation here. And then asked me to answer a few other questions and so forth. But I found it so fascinating that that was back in my in the 80s. I was in my 20s, 90s. I was in my 30s. And it was so fascinating because when I was in college, I took psychology and I loved it. Did horrible, and I think I got a D. But it was fascinating to me because I've always been intrigued by, I guess, partly the human condition, but also wanting to not only do, quote unquote, the right thing, but I also understood at an early age, though I didn't know that it was karma,
right,
that what comes around goes around. I mean, it's proven in physics, isn't it? You know, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction.
Right.
Are we, from the Pleiadian perspective, since that's the group we're talking about, the species, I guess I should say, if we were to create a scale from 1 to 10,
uh-huh,
as far as a higher consciousness, an evolutionary process and so forth, where would you say they would place us at this point in our evolution, in our existence?
4 to a 5.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Now that's the population at large.
Yes.
There are others who are much higher. And
9s and 10s, yes.
We always know there are others who are lower. but at the same time, is there also a recognition, as connected as we are, that each one of us is here, having signed a contract before we came in, to live out the life and have the experiences that we have, and that each one of us has every right to be here just like anybody else, no matter where they are on that scale?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to live out the best life that you can have. That doesn't mean the best financially or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's the best life to giving to yourself and others, to help that growth, to promote it, to nurture it. And we are no longer a nurturing society.
Yeah. I'm curious, do the Pleiadians have anything similar to what has been considered to be by many in our society the most important aspect of our existence, the economy?
Yeah. They do have an economy, but they barter and trade.
Aha.
They base it on money. Money, we are in a different vibration than the Pleiadians. We're in that three-dimensional thump on it world. We need money for housing, things like that. But money has become the focus of life, mm-hmm, rather than an accoutrement to it. So it can be damaging, and it can be very much a blessing to others. But we have to sort of spiritualize the money.
Mm-hmm.
And learn how to do with it the best for everyone, including self and everyone else.
I have heard it said that money is nothing more than energy. And that's, you talked about energy at the front end of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to figure out how to transform that energy from one form to another, whether it be from the paycheck that I get and the direct deposit to the rent or the food or the gas, mm-hmm, in the car and so on and so forth. I don't know if you're familiar with a gentleman by the name of Jacques Fresco, an architect. Yeah. He's passed on. I had an opportunity to interview him when he was 94 and 99. And he was an architect of the Venus Project, which, uh-huh, is a futuristic cities and so forth that were circular in nature. You had a central hub, and then you had everybody living and working around that hub. If you wanted a car, you could have one. You know, this wasn't socialism or communism or anything.
Right.
But one of the things that was so fascinating to me, and you kind of alluded to this as well, was, and I came up with this analogy that he said was fairly accurate. We all know what a memory stick is, all right? A USB memory stick. All right, well, there's a store that carries that and other things. And it's got this huge bin filled with them. And you get to walk in, you just pick one up and you walk out. And there's a gentleman that comes along and pulls out a weapon and says, give me your memory stick. And I would say, well, but there's a store right down there. You can take as many as you want. No, I want yours. Well, and of course, I'm going to, without fear, I'm just going to hand it to him. And I'll go back to the store and I'll get another one. No big deal, you know, because that way I can honestly say, no, he didn't steal it from me. I gave it to him. Okay. So first of all, there's an abundance of resources to start with that are shared by everyone. He says that the biggest problem with the resources is not the supply and demand. It's the distribution.
Yes.
That's where the problem is. There's no crime with this individual. And, you know, you learn not to abuse the privilege. And I don't, and unfortunately, I asked him, I said, will this new civilization come about in my lifetime? He says, probably not. And I was so disappointed because I wanted it then and now. But the Pleiadians, and you talk about the fact that they barter.
Yes.
What about crime and conflicts and those kinds of things and even relationships?
They've mastered that because they're telepathic. How can you commit a crime when you're telepathic? If you're thinking about it, you're informing everybody out there that is receptive. They're picking up on the idea that you're going to commit some kind of a crime. So they don't have crime like we have it. There's something else that I think is so very, very important. And that is that they respect each other no matter what phase of development as a being they are in. They respect that person's lessons. That's important. We have a tendency to not do that. We view them as either above us, below us, and therefore we want something from them. Yeah. If they're above us, we want whatever it is they have that we perceive to be better than ours. And that's, we just have to have that generalized respect and understanding everybody's going through what they need to go through without someone pulling the strings and demanding something that isn't rightfully theirs.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a different system, but the telepathy, oh my gosh. I would love a world where there is telepathic communication. There would be no lies. There would be no misleading. There would be no crime.
Yeah.
We would be able to exist with each other, knowing, openly knowing what we have to share with each other and how we can help each other grow.
Sounds an awful lot like the precogs in Minority Report.
Yeah.
A little bit like that. This is it to me. It like I said before, this is fascinating for me to talk to you about these things. One other element that I wanted to touch upon has to do with this aspect of personal growth and development. And I know I asked about a scale on 1 to 10 as far as the higher consciousness aspect of the human beings. Would you say that the Pleiadians are probably closer to 8 or 9?
Yeah, there are 7 or 8, I'd
seven
say.
Or eight, okay.
Yeah, they're developing too, just like we are. Okay. They're constantly evolving and changing and growing and learning.
And you know, the thought that just crossed my mind was, you know, that I'm asking all these questions of a detailed nature about the Pleiadians. And the thought that came through was, you know, that none of that is really relevant. You know, yes, we're all connected, and yeah, they've got their way of life, and we have ours. What is it? Is there a central message from all of the people that you have interviewed and documented and so forth, is there a central message from the Pleiadians that they really want to get across to the humans here on Earth?
That we are not the only thinking beings in the universe. That is the bottom line message. That's the primary one, that we have to understand we are all related.
And I would ask if we have reached the point of no return in regards to self-annihilation the fifth time. I believe it's five, might be six.
We're working on the sixth.
Working on the sixth extinction event. But I'm just curious as to whether or not we have crossed that point of no return, or
no.
is in
there
every
is
moment,
time.
In every moment, we can go either way.
That's very true. It is literally moment to moment what we choose. And we being the collective as well as the individual, because it's that choice that creates the reality. They have something called an event clock. If A happens and B happens, C will happen. Mm-hmm. And they say we are not to the point of reaching C yet. So we're in a position where the changes and decisions we make now can either destroy us or save us.
You've heard the old saying about choices, and the choices that we've made in the past have brought us to where we are. And I've even gone so far as to say, do you know that some of the choices that you and I made as children have brought us right here where we are talking to each other? Now, we can't exactly see the path, but here we are.
Right.
And then, of course, the choices we make today will place us where we will be in the future. And one of my guests had a great addendum to that. He says, yes, that's true. However, he said, all of the choices that you make now are based upon your perception of what you think the future will be.
Mm-hmm. That's profound. That is really good.
Yeah. And I don't take credit for that, but I'm grateful for it nonetheless.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of, I mean, I'm not a one who believes in the apocalypse and the four horsemen and all of that stuff. I'm an optimist. The glass is half full. I'm just trying to discover what it's full of. I'm hoping something really good, like, oh, I don't know, like Irish cream. That's always tasty. And so I don't buy into the prepper mentality, the doom and gloom. And I'm humorously shocked at those who follow the biblical philosophy and prophecies. I say humorously shocked at their surprise at the direction our civilization is going, especially in America. And I'm going, but wait a minute. Your own prophecies told us this was going to happen. I'm not saying that they're right. I'm saying, why are you surprised? You told us this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So just sit back and watch. Why are you trying to fix it? But again, I don't buy into those. I believe that we have, there's always room for improvement and expansion. And this is, I think it's fascinating. Now, to wrap things up here, let me ask you about the book, which is UFO Contact from the Pleiades. What is the, if there is one, the central message you and the other contributors, not just those who you've interviewed and so forth, but those who helped to compile this 45 years ago and then today, what's the central message you want to get across to us?
Well, it sort of falls in line with what the Pleiadians said, that we are not the only thinking beings, but to explore, to have a sense of adventure about exploring, because life is too wonderful to ignore. So if you have a question, dig deeper, look harder. Don't take somebody else's word for something. Get in there and really find out for yourself. Be true to yourself in the process of that. And do it without fear. And I think you'll be able to grow leaps and bounds so easily if you just open up to that.
I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation up to this point. This is fascinating. We're talking with Britt Elders. She is what would I call you? The compile help the co-compiler.
I'm one of the original investigators and authors.
Okay, so the original investor 45 years ago,
right?
Back in the late 70s, early 80s,
right? And,
it to me, I love. I'm getting used to conversing about this more and more because it is something that we have to start taking seriously. Just like when I was working for that Christian station, and I would hear people talk about their miraculous, their experiences, their spiritual or supernatural experiences. There was no way that I was going to shut them down. Oh no, no, no! I don't see anywhere in the book that it says that can happen. And no, because they truly believe this happened. Who am I to argue with them?
That's right.
So it's the same thing with these folks who have had these contacts, these experiences with otherworldly beings, whether it be the Pleiadians or otherwise. It happened. You can't argue it because it's changed their lives. Just
and what
as
can you learn from it?
That's
as
a key.
An individual, what can you learn?
That's a key. That's a key. This just came into my mind. What about past lives?
Oh, the Pleiadians do believe in them.
Okay.
They believe, in fact, they feel that that's one of the reasons they were so close to Billy and he was to them, was that they had had a past life together. So your lives may not all be on Earth. They may be in other systems as well.
That's what I have heard,
yeah.
That I may have had lives on other worlds as well. I've even been through what's called life between life, life
yeah,
between
yeah.
lives. You're familiar, Dr.
Yes,
Newton's
sir.
work and everything.
Yes.
We have a practitioner here in Santa Barbara, and I went through that with him. I loved my previous life. It's not that I don't like this one, but it was pioneer days. I was a farmer, had a farm, and I knew everybody in town. Farm burned down, so I moved up to the cabin I had up in the snowy mountains. Came out one day, put my feet up on the rail, sat back in my chair. I grabbed my hat, I put it up. Oh, it's been a good life. And I left. I just left.
That's great.
I would love to do that again, but not for another 40 years. My goal is to live to be 100. That's fascinating stuff. Britt Elders is my guest, and you are listening to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and Britt, I want to thank you once again. Britt Elders, BrittElders.com is the website, which will be linked to. Thank you so much. This has been fascinating, and I know there's so much more we could talk about. I think it's probably true. We've only scratched the surface.
Yes, that's true. Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
However, I have three final questions that I want to ask you that I ask all of my guests. But before I do, I want to thank you for listening to and watching. Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, where we are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we are here on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for our special edition of Tell Me Your Story, and Monday through Friday, believe it or not, from 8 to 9 a.m. So 9 different programs, 9 different topics, 9 different guests, 9 different conversations. We hope that you will listen. We stream those times at richarddugan.com. We podcast at SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, Blueberry, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, many other locations. And we're on YouTube where you can watch these conversations. I hope you'll subscribe. But even more importantly, I hope that you'll select notification so that when a new conversation is posted, you'll know about it and you can tune into it. We also ask that if you can support the work we're doing financially, we would be so gratefully appreciative. We have a PayPal account. It is there for your security as well as ours. And when asked to submit to the payment, to whom are you sending it? They'll ask you for an email address. So easy. Richard@richarddugan.com. That's Richard@richarddugan.com. One other thing, and I wish that I had gone here, but the universe apparently didn't ask the question. And that is, we hope that you'll spend time during this, the decade of perfect vision, the 2020s, to go within to that quiet, peaceful, calm, still place and listen to that still small voice. I'm actually going to go ahead and ask the question because it just came up. Do they have an inner voice? Do they have intuition and those kinds of things? They do.
Yes, they do.
So
And
that
they
is also.
follow them. They rely on them very heavily.
Boy, then let's take a lesson from the Pleiadians and rely on it. Because I'll tell you what, there have been times, I don't know about you, Britt, but there have been times when I get a premonition or a prompting to do something, and I'm going, no, that's contrary to my plan. My plan, really?
Yeah, no.
And finally, I acquiesce. I go forward. And then within a couple of days, I look back and go, man, am I glad I followed that prompting, because if I hadn't, but I did. So, you know, there you go. All right, let's get to those three final questions before we wrap things up here. And again, my thanks to you for joining us here on the program. The first of those three questions is, who is Britt Elders?
A curious soul that wants to learn as much as she can on an individual level, but learn it from others as well as through my own lessons. I'm a writer. I love to write and I love to listen. So yeah, that's Britt.
What gets you up in the morning?
Happiness. I wake up happy. I am so thrilled to be living right now, to experience things. I live in a forest. I can go out and literally hug a tree if I want to. It's just, it's a joy to be alive.
Woman after my own heart, I live up in the mountains too. Finally, what was your best day?
Every day. I mean, they just keep getting better. I can't complain. Even the bad things teach you something. So I learn from everything and love every minute of it.
You know, it makes me think of course, that question comes from the movie City Slickers, when they're in the first movie, were riding along, and Mitch is asking his buddies, what was your best day? And they go down that list. And back in on Labor Day of 1993, I took a trip up to Woods Canyon Lake, north of Phoenix, I believe it was. Well, I know it's north of Phoenix. Anyway,
right.
And had a little tension between myself and one of the guys that was up there. He had to go back down to Scottsdale for some medical tests, so I was stuck up there. There was no car for me to leave with. But I had helped him to refurbish this boat. And so I get up that morning, whereas the night before he was trying to tell me how to do dishes. Well, I grew up in a family of eight. I know how to do dishes. And so that morning I get up, I make myself some breakfast, I do the dishes, I head for the lake, I get in that rowboat, I row back and forth and back and forth, having the grandest time. I come back, start a massive fire for a single hot dog. The other buddy shows up. We set up another fire. He had brought with him a big old bone-in ham, and we dunked that in the pork and beans. And we sat there, had dinner what was it? Jack Daniels and Coke. And that, when I looked at that, and I had just seen the movie recently prior to that, I said, this is my best day. And every day after that, for that entire month, I was saying, this is my best day. Oh, no, this is my, and it just was like, it just kept rolling. So I can
let it snowball.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Britt Elders, thank you again for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story. This has been fantastic. And I hope to have you back again, because as I said, we've only just begun.
That's right. I'd love it. Thank you, Richard.
And I thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, where we are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And until our next broadcast, podcast, videocast, love to Lal. Jeanette, I am still listening. Dad, continue to be happy, because I am. Smokey, I'll see you on the other side. To my dear friend Zorro, aho, aho.